Hello, hello, New York Rangers fans, and welcome to episode 20 of the New Ice City Podcast. I'm your host, Vincent Mercogliano of the USA Today Network, and we have officially reached 20 episodes. Thank you very much to everybody who has been listening all along the way. I hope you guys have been enjoying it thus far. It's been a lot of fun for me, and we have another fun episode on tap for you guys today. Our guest, our first recurring guest, I wasn't planning on having this guy on so soon again, but then I saw a story that he put out last week and I was like, all right, we have to talk about this. And that would be Scott Wheeler of The Athletic. He is a prospects reporter who covers the entire league and had the Rangers ranked as the second best prospect pool in the NHL as of this season. So I asked Scott if he would come back on, even though I had him on, I think, in October or November as well. So he will be our first recurring guest, and we will dissect the prospect rankings that he put out for the Rangers. He ranked his top 20 favorite prospects for the Rangers, so we will have a chance to go over that with him on our 20th episode. But first, let's dive into what is going on with the Rangers these days. And of course, for any of you that are listening as of Thursday morning with the Rangers in Philadelphia getting ready to play the Flyers, things are not looking so good right now. The Rangers are coming off of one of their worst losses of the season. In many ways, this one seemed to sting the most. That is the 5-2 loss to the Devils on Tuesday night. The Rangers had a really bad first period but got out of it scoreless because Igor Shesterkin was really good. Then they played pretty well in the second period, got a couple of goals, went into the third period tied, and then just completely fell on their face, ended up losing 5-2 to the Devils. Their fourth straight loss, so panic is kind of setting in right now. You can really feel it if you're not necessarily around the team, but around the fans and hearing from emails and tweets and all the different stuff I've been getting, especially in the last 24 hours or so. And this one really did feel different in a lot of ways. Because, in particular, after the game, we got a chance to talk to Mika Zibanejad, we had a chance to talk to Chris Kreider, of course we talked to David Quinn, and there was just this feeling of dejection. You know, the Rangers are now at the quarter point of the season. They're 4-7-3, nowhere near where anybody wanted them to be at this point, and now at the point where it's not early anymore. We're moving into the second quarter of the season, so the early season rust, the long layoff, all that stuff, the short training camp, we're kind of past the point of those being legitimate excuses. Hearing from Zibanejad and Kreider at the end of that game, Zibanejad said the team isn't playing with enough desperation. Kreider said it's unacceptable. He said the Devils, quote, flat out wanted it more. So those things to me got my antennas up right away because it's like, you know, a lot of times after some of these losses, the Rangers have been right there until the end, and you heard them talk about, okay, we're doing some good things, we're playing better defense, we're not converting our chances, but the chances are there, that sort of thing. This was just straight up, we weren't good enough, we didn't put the effort out there. And when you hear those effort concerns, that kind of raises the red flag, I think, more than usual, more than with some of the other stuff that we've heard after other losses. I asked David Quinn point blank at the press conference last night, did you feel like effort was an issue? He said yes. He was very short, wasn't in a very talkative mood, was clearly, as he said, pissed off. He was not happy with the way the team played. And then I followed that question up and said, how do you address it? And again, the answer was an answer that showed that he was pretty ticked off. Now, we had a chance to follow back up with him today for practice on Wednesday, and he was in more of a reflective mood, definitely showing some accountability, definitely putting a lot of the blame on himself for the Rangers' struggles, and in particular for that lackluster performance. Because again, when you're talking about effort, that's the kind of thing that really shouldn't come up with a team in any professional sports league, and especially not once you're a quarter of the way through the season. Maybe in the first couple games, you're still getting your feet under you, getting your legs under you, whatever, but 14 games into the season, to hear the Rangers questioning their own effort was an alarming thing to hear. As far as how much blame we put on Quinn, I know this has been a big topic of conversation. It's kind of the chicken or the egg thing in terms of the players that aren't performing well. I'm going to get into some other stuff in a moment, but let's just focus on the players who are underperforming right now, guys like Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider, who we just mentioned. it's sort of this chicken or the egg thing. You know, how much blame do you put on the players for their own struggles and how much of it is on the coaching? I've always been more of the mindset that players play and coaches, while they can definitely make a difference when it comes to in-game strategy, motivation, all that kind of stuff, you know, it's ultimately on the players to perform. And if they're not performing, more than 50% of the blame falls on the players' shoulders. But as far as Quinn, and now, you know, this is something that I want to address here. A lot of our Twitter questions were about this. I'm not going to get into this in the Twitter question segment of the program, but we will talk about it now. I want to sort of separate the valid concerns from the overreactions. The valid concerns for this team are pretty clear. The lack of offense has been alarming. They've only scored 4 goals in their last 4 games. 2 of those have been shutouts, and their top guys are not producing. Now, they've had some injuries. Losing Filip Hedl was a very big blow, and we're seeing how much of a big blow that was the longer that the Rangers go without him. They played the last 2 games without Artemi Panarin, who we know is their most dynamic player, their top scorer. So, you know, you have to factor that in. But even before Panarin went out, the lack of offense for this team and the lack of a consistent power play, which has been a big issue, those are legitimate concerns. We talked a lot about how the Rangers have improved their defense, and I know that was a focus in training camp. I wrote a lot about that during training camp, and you have to give some credit there because they are allowing significantly less when you look at goals allowed, when you look at shots allowed, when you look at scoring chances allowed. But the offense has completely fallen on its face. They were the 5th highest scoring team in the NHL last season, and now they're like in the late 20s. So that is a concern, and Quinn and the players all need to figure that out. So that is an absolutely valid thing to criticize them about right now. The other thing that we can say is valid is their inability to close out these close wins. The Rangers have had 14 games played. 7 of them have been 1-goal losses. And in 4 of those losses, they blew third period leads. So whatever knack they had at the end of the season last year where they were pulling out a lot of close games, they've clearly lost that. This is a team that's finding its way, that isn't playing with a lot of confidence, and is struggling to close out games. They're struggling to not only close out games when they have the lead, but when they go into the third period with a tie or when they're down 1 goal, they just aren't showing that knack, that wherewithal for finding a way to win. And they're a young team. We know this. The youngest roster in the NHL. I've repeated it several times. They're going to experience growing pains. And in the long run, you hope that these experiences will make them stronger. They will learn from this. They will learn how to become a team that can pull out those kind of wins in the future. But right now, they're not doing it, and that is an obvious concern. And then the last thing, which we just touched on, is the effort. And that, to me, reflects more so than anything else on the coach. When they're in this kind of a rut, when they had already lost 3 in a row going into that game with the Devils, you cannot come out and let a team that just had more than 2 weeks off basically outplay you and outwork you, and as Chris Kreider said, outhit us. They outdid everything in terms of their effort level versus the Rangers. So that is a huge red flag, and that is something that moving into this Thursday night game in Philly, you need to see corrected. You cannot have the Rangers come out of this game against the Flyers saying we didn't play hard enough. That is not going to fly, and things would really go into a dark place if they have another game where their own team is questioning its effort at the end of the game. So offense, inability to close out games, effort level, all of those things need to be corrected. And Quinn deservingly gets the criticism for some of that stuff. From here, they've played 14 games. They have 42 games left this season. Quinn, to me, and I wrote this today, these 42 games are really important for him because the Rangers felt like they came out of the 2019-20 season moving in the right direction. They had made a lot of progress. They showed clear and obvious improvement as the season went on. Now, you don't want to go into this season coming out of it. Even, you know, a lot of people talk about the playoffs. And to me, if you were looking at this realistically coming into the season, it was always a long shot for the Rangers to make the playoffs. That's why JD never gave any kind of a playoff mandate. That's why, if you looked at it objectively with this division, it was always going to be difficult for them. I predicted them to finish 6th in the division. So if you thought that they were going to be a top 4 team in this division, you had higher expectations than I did. The Rangers clearly were going to have an uphill battle to be able to do something like that. And I know everybody talks about look at all the talent they have. But I don't think you're being completely honest with yourself if you feel like this is the type of talent that right now is ready to consistently beat teams like the Bruins, the Capitals, the Islanders, the Penguins, the Flyers, for example. We're about to see the Flyers for the first time this season on Thursday night. You know, that's a tall order asking this team to make the playoffs. And the talent, while yes, they do have a lot of talent, a lot of that talent is still far, far from its prime. Guys like Kaapo Kakko, Alexi Lafreniere, they're still finding their way in this league. And even though a guy like Keandre Miller looks great, he's only played a handful of games in the NHL so far. They're relying on a lot of guys that are very, very inexperienced and far from their prime. So the talent still has to manifest. The talent still has to develop, grow. It's not the wide open window for them to contend quite yet. They're still working their way toward that. But what you want to see is progress. That is the mandate. Development is the mandate. In the rest of this season, three quarters of the way to go, 42 games to go, it's important that the Rangers do better than 4-7-3 in this next quarter of the season and the quarters of the season to follow. They need to show that this team is on the right path. And this takes me to the final point, which is the stuff that we look at as overreactions that aren't exactly valid concerns right now. Of course, a lot of people are calling for heads to roll, calling for people to be fired. I can tell you with confidence that is not a conversation the Rangers are having right now. That is not anything that's under consideration. So you are really kind of working yourself up and getting yourself aggravated over nothing if you are expecting that to happen anytime soon. It's not. And it's, in my mind, it would be silly to do that right now. All you're going to do is disrupt things, and it doesn't really accomplish much. This is a shortened season. It's a unique season. You got the COVID stuff going on. There's just so many factors and reasons that the smart, wise, prudent thing to do is be patient through this season. Let's see how it plays out. And then once the offseason comes around, that's when you make your evaluations. And if it keeps going in the direction it's going, if the Rangers do finish with a poor losing record and a lot of these trends that we talked about going in the wrong direction with offense and power play and inability to close out games, then yes, it is a conversation that you have this offseason. But disrupting things now is not something the Rangers are looking to do. I can tell you that with confidence. That is something that they have been very clear about in my conversations with people around the team. So I would caution everybody to just catch your breath. Criticism is warranted. No doubt about it. And they need to prove that they can right the ship right now. And they have about 42 games to do it. And then I think when you have the more serious conversation is this offseason. If things are really going poorly when this season ends, then I wouldn't rule it out that maybe they have a new coach going into the new season. But right now, the Rangers coming into this season, I know we're very pleased with how things have gone under Quinn. They were pleased with the development of a lot of young players. And you know, that's a thing here. The other big knock that everybody says, or at least, you know, some vocal ones on Twitter say, is that all the kids are being ruined. The talent is being wasted. Nobody's being developed. That's not fair because we've seen Kaapo Kakko, even though he doesn't have the points to show for it right now, he is playing much, much better. He's arguably been their best forward in the last few games. We've seen a lot of the young defensemen like Keandre Miller, Adam Fox, Ryan Lindgren really step up and become crucial players for this team at a young age. We've seen guys like Igor Shesterkin emerge. We've seen other young forwards, guys like Pavel Buchnevich, show a lot of growth. Whether you want to give Quinn credit for it or not, Ryan Strom had a career year last year. Mika Zibanejad had a career year last year. I know Mika is struggling right now, but you can't say Quinn gets no credit for what he did last season and then gets all the blame for him not playing well this season. It's not fair. It's not being objective to say he gets no credit when things are going well and all the blame when things are going poorly. The Rangers, I can tell you, internally, were mostly happy with how the development process was going heading into this season. So take that as you will, but my inclination is, in this moment in time, 14 games into this season, that things aren't going well, and they need to be corrected. The ship needs to be righted, and these next 42 games are pretty important. Not important from the standpoint that, you know, they need to make a playoff push or else everybody's in trouble, but there needs to be clear signs of progress. It can't have this feeling of the effort isn't great, they're inconsistent, they're losing at an alarming pace. There needs to be more than that for Quinn to solidify that he will be back for the 21-22 season. I still think there's a pretty solid chance he is, but right now the things aren't going well and they need to be turned around. So that's where we're at right now. It's not a situation where I think behind closed doors things are getting broken and slammed and everybody's mad at each other and you know, they're talking about heads rolling in the next day or two. But I do think that the level of urgency needs to reflect the fact that the first quarter of the season has not gone well. All right. With that, we're going to move on. We've spent a lot of time on this topic. I want to get to Scott, and then I'll be back after this to talk about your Twitter questions and close out the show. But for now, let's get into some Rangers prospects talk with Scott Wheeler. And now we will welcome into the program for the second time our first ever recurring guest, Scott Wheeler from The Athletic. Scott just put out his NHL prospect pool rankings with the Rangers coming in at number two. So when I saw that, I was like, I got to bother him again and get him back on here. So Scott, how are you doing? Thank you for coming on again.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, we were just kind of talking before we recorded here, but it's been a busy 2 months for me with the World Juniors and the holidays and then straight into this project, which is probably my biggest project of every season. So glad it's over with, proud of the work and looking forward to things slowing down for me a little bit here over the next month or two.
It boggles my mind. I mean, I spend a lot of time obviously on Rangers and I think I'm pretty well versed in the Rangers prospect pool, but it boggles mm-hmm. my mind how you can do that for all 31 teams.
Yeah, it's the big challenge is just being upfront with, okay, if I've seen one player play 15 times in the last 2 years and I've seen another player play twice in the last 2 years, then you've got to own that. I think people see through it when you're trying to do as many players as this project does, which is typically sort of 500 to 550 players. Obviously, the top prospects are easy. I've watched those kids play regularly for years and years and years. In some cases, since they were playing minor hockey in and around Toronto at 15 years old. So that part of it is easy. It's the players who are a little bit further down where you'll notice in the rankings that if you read throughout the series that I start to rely on other people some more, start to rely on sources and their coaches and other scouts and their general managers and their agents and sort of try to use quotes and video to reinforce my thoughts on those kids. Because once you get outside of, I don't know, the top seven or eight prospects on each team, and you get into the teens and these rankings each ran from sort of 15 to 20 players deep, then it starts to get a little tougher to differentiate between the players and to give them a reasonable projection that isn't just, okay, I don't think this kid's going to make it. So it becomes a little bit more of a mixed bag, and you have to be upfront with A, your experience watching those players, and then B, try as much as I can with some of those players that I've seen a little less of or that aren't in big programs where I would have had regular updates on them, to just be upfront about, okay, here's where I'm at, or going out and searching out insight from other people on those kids.
So I want to talk about some individual guys, but looking at it as a whole, you have the Rangers ranked number two. I know you have the Kings number one. I've seen that we had JD Burke on a month or two ago, and he had, I believe, the same thing, Kings one, Rangers two. You had the Rangers at four the year before. So Is it as simple as getting Lafreniere, or is there more to it in terms of why you're so high on their prospect pool?
I think there's more to it. Obviously, Alexi kind of changes everything for an organization in terms of their prospect pool. And we know that it hasn't been the start that he or the Rangers surely wanted for him in his career. But I still think he's going to be a fabulous player in the same way that Andrei Svechnikov and Jack Hughes didn't have the starts that they wanted in their careers. So it happens. There are bumps in the roads. I think he'll be just fine. But at the end of the day, he's the big boost. But it's not just that. It's the development of Keandre Miller into a top four, borderline top pairing defenseman in the NHL. It's the continued growth of Zach Jones, the continued growth of Nils Lundqvist. It's the acquisition of a player, even like an Evan Vierling a little bit further down, and certainly a Braden Schneider helps. Some of those kids aren't necessarily the kids that I would have taken. Schneider's a great example of a player who I probably thought was taken a few slots too high. But at the end of the day, that doesn't take away from him as a legitimate prospect. So you start to add a few pieces beyond Lafreniere in last year's draft, and then you have two or three players that have taken fairly significant steps in their development since the last time I did this project. And the result is a boost up from sort of 4 to 2. And yeah, that isn't to say I don't think they're clearly better than the teams that were sort of slotted behind them. I could listen to arguments for, say, Ottawa, who was third on my list, as having a better pool than the Rangers. I think those groupings were kind of tight, but they're still firmly in that, after Los Angeles, that next group of four or five teams that have really, really strong pools overall.
But LA to you was a runaway number one.
Yes, clear cut for me. It wasn't even, honestly, and I know this kind of comes across as insulting, but it wasn't even close. It was, what they've assembled is remarkable. What they've acquired in terms of that young group, not just through the draft, but through trades by going out and finding a player like Tyler Madden, who I think has a real opportunity to be a top nine forward in the NHL. Those kinds of trades, there's just such a depth there now where players who were ranked sort of 19th, 20th on that list, or even in the honorable mentions who didn't crack the top 20 on that list for LA, those are kids who would rank on the Rangers group sort of in the top 10. So it's depth in numbers. And then now they've obviously got the quality with Kaliev and with Turcotte and with Quinton Byfield. So it's a really, really impressive group that the Kings have assembled.
So with the Rangers, your top four, I think is pretty fair to say it's consensus. I think most people, the order might vary a little bit, 2 through 4, but most people have those four as the top guys in the organization. We did as well when we did our prospect rankings. We'll start with Lafreniere, just touch on him really quick. Have you seen anything? You know, people are very alarmist when it comes to a number one overall pick and wanting him to perform right away. We know he only has the one goal at the time of this recording through the 13 games. Do you still feel I'm sure you still feel confident in him, but have you seen anything that has maybe given you a little pause in terms of his start? Or do you think that this is kind of to be expected?
A little bit of both. First of all, in the interest of transparency, I've only watched the Rangers play a few of those 13 games. So I've only seen, say, 30, 40% of the shifts that he's probably played in the NHL this year. But in the games that I've watched of the Rangers this season, I don't know. I think he's looked fine. He's looked involved. He's looked active. But the inside the offensive zone, that comfort level in terms of taking a puck off the wall, attacking the slot, finishing off plays, using his great playmaking ability, it just hasn't been there. And I think part of that is a little bit some of the concerns that people had about his skating. I always argued that those concerns were overstated, and I still do believe that. But that has kind of entered the conversation at least a little bit. I don't think he's playing as decisively or as aggressively as you'd like him to play. And then the minutes just, it's hard. He's playing 13, 14 minutes a night. He's not playing 16, 17, 18 minutes where he's getting a ton of touches and really sort of getting his confidence up right from the beginning. And part of that is because the Rangers are in a little bit of a different spot than, say, had he landed in Ottawa or in LA. I think the start to his season would have looked a little different with those organizations because he would have been more of a focal point. So we always knew he was going to have to play behind Panarin at left wing, and all of that was sort of going to be a factor early on for him. I still think he's going to figure it out. I don't think this is a Nail Yakupov or a Nolan Patrick kind of situation where you're going to be disappointed in the outcome. And obviously Nolan Patrick, a lot of that had to do with his health. But I still think he'll be closer to kind of that Jack Hughes, Andrei Svechnikov kind of level. He was never going to be an Austin Matthews or a Connor McDavid, but I think you could still project him as kind of that star quality player. Short of being a superstar, I still think you've got a star quality player there. And I think that'll come in time. He's so big and strong and athletic and talented. So I think he'll put it all together. It's just going to take minutes, reps, and then that comfort level, I think, is a big deal for him just in terms of asserting himself like he does against his peers. So we'll see. It's been a little bit slow for him, but I'm not too worried about it.
All right. Nils Lundqvist, you have at number two. He really has skyrocketed in the last year or so, and he seems to be following up that breakout season that he had in the SHL last year with another really good season this year. I know he just had a lot of minutes for Team Sweden. So what are you seeing from him, and why do you like him so much?
Yeah, he has just grown on me so much. I kind of had him ranked as a second round prospect when the Rangers took him in the late first in that draft class. And I've sort of eaten my words on that, if you will. He is legitimately, I don't think he's one of those sort of true crowning D prospects in the game. He's not a Bowen Byram or a Jamie Drysdale or a Moritz Seider. But I think when you get into that sort of second tier of the top D prospects in the world right now, Nils is in that group. He's proven in the last two seasons with two of the best age adjusted seasons we've ever seen, at least in modern history in the SHL for his age. So it's been unbelievable to watch him. He has played significant minutes both of the last two seasons. He plays 20 minutes a night for that team. His shot on the power play has really come a long way. He's using his shot a lot more than he did sort of in the junior ranks coming up. He's playing a lot more aggressively. And I now see a kid who's got an opportunity to run one of the two power plays in the NHL and to be a sort of real top four, legitimate top four piece at even strength as well. So I think he's going to give major two-way value at the NHL level. And if Adam Fox and him are your two power play guys moving forward, I think you're in a really good spot long-term. So he's just another piece to the puzzle, another sort of excellent mobile two-way type who can do a little bit of everything. And I don't think the fact that he's on the quote unquote smaller size is much of an issue for him, because he's a sturdy kid and he's strong on his box outs and strong along the wall. And you don't really notice that side of it. So I just think he's unbelievable. He's been a ton of fun to watch. He has come along as well as any prospect in the NHL in the last 2 years. And it's been fun to watch him sort of progress like he has.
And I think Rangers fans could see him as soon as next year. I think that a goal of theirs is to get him in on his entry-level contract after this SHL season is over. And then my expectation is we could see him at camp next fall. We'll see. Obviously, that's still to be determined. Then at number three, this is a guy who has really captured the imagination of Rangers fans, and that's Keandre Miller. Coming into camp, I had talked to various people about him after he signed in the spring. And the thought was, you know, he could have an opportunity to make the team, but he may need some AHL seasoning. We want to see him prove that he can handle the defensive responsibilities of the mm-hmm. NHL game. We knew about the size and the mobility and the skill and those type of things that he brings, but he has stepped right onto the NHL ice and really been one of the Rangers' best players. He's already been the most consistent partner Jacob Trouba has had in his time in the with the Rangers so far. So has he done everything than you would have expected from him at this point?
He has exceeded my expectations for sure. Actually, one of the last story, the last time I traveled for work was February of last year when I went to Wisconsin before the pandemic really sort of grabbed hold. And I embedded with that University of Wisconsin team and really got to know Keandre. And I think through that process, one of the things I learned about him was that he is just hockey is his everything. And I know we hear that about a lot of these kids, but it's different for him. It means more to him than it means to these other kids. He's obsessed by the sport in a different way than these other kids were. School was never really a big focus for him because he was so focused on his training and staying fit and being in the gym and being at the rink. And this has just been his sole focus. And so it's from that perspective, it's really nice to see him having the success that he's having, because this really is his dream, maybe in more ways than some of these other kids. And then the other piece of the puzzle is that last year didn't go exactly as he probably wanted it to at Wisconsin. And questions began to be asked after an excellent freshman year of, okay, what is ultimately Keandre's upside? And I settled in the group that said he's probably capable next season of playing in the NHL on a third pairing. And then he's probably a second pairing guy throughout his prime. And of course, what has happened is he has leapfrogged that first step for sure. He's past third pairing at this point. And he hasn't looked out of place in a top four role and borderline playing even more than in more considerable minutes than a quote unquote second pairing defenseman. So he's already playing like the defender I thought he was going to be in his prime. I thought he was going to get to maybe this point in his career, 3-4 years down the line after sort of ironing out some of the kinks and that kind of a thing. So I don't think there's any question that he has exceeded my expectations, and I had very high expectations for Keandre. But I mean, it's all there. The athleticism, the skating, the length, he's making better choices. I think that's always been a big deal for him is was he actually making the right choices with the puck? And then defensively on reads, was he trying to do too much? Was he trying to close gaps too quickly? All of that was a factor in terms of trying to pinpoint what he was going to look like in the NHL. And he just looks so much calmer out there than I expected him to look. So it's a big deal for him, and it's a big deal for the Rangers, I think.
Yeah, and I asked him this question, and I'm curious what you would think about it. Is he one of those guys? I mean, he was really good as a freshman, and he was good as a sophomore. I talked to Tony Granato, the Wisconsin coach. I had him on the show a couple months ago, and he said that he thought it was overblown, that he had a down sophomore season, that his responsibilities had kind of changed, and maybe that's why he didn't have as many points.
Definitely.
But do you think that with him, with all the physical attributes that we talked about, with the commitment that we talked about, and I heard from everybody around the Rangers that this offseason he worked his butt off and did everything and more that they asked him to do to prepare himself. But do you think that he's just maybe a guy whose game translates to the NHL maybe even better than it did to college in some ways, that he just he's so well built and equipped to handle the NHL game that his skills can kind of shine through at this high-paced game at that level?
Yeah, definitely. Because of his size, I think that was always going to be true. Because of his sort of size skating combination, that was always going to be a factor for him. The big question was whether the pace of play would be the same. I think there's a big difference between a speed with which a player skates and whether they can actually play at pace and play under pressure and whether they scramble or make mistakes or turn pucks over. And I think that's where I've seen the borderline the most growth in Keandre this year has just been, he doesn't look too overwhelmed. I mean, there are still times where he might slap the puck around or he might rush a decision or that kind of a thing. But by and large, for a player his age, he's making those reads extremely well. He's making those reads effectively. So I think that has kind of been the deciding factor. But in terms of the translation to the NHL, he always had a kind of pro-style game, pro-style frame, and sort of that kind of approach too, where he's comfortable, even for a long guy, he's comfortable hanging onto the puck. He's comfortable skating it up ice. That kind of a thing has always been a part of his game as well. So now that he's got the confidence and the sort of experience, if you will, early on, and the willingness to use all of those tools, I think you've seen the best of him, if you will.
At number four, you have Vitali Kratsov. We know he had his struggles last season. He's been in the KHL all year, had a chance to really settle there and not worry about bouncing around. And, you know, the goals have been there. The skill, we've seen a lot of highlights where he's flashing the skill that we've heard so much about all these years. Do you think that this was an important growth year for him?
Definitely. I think people got a little, I said this at the time and actually took a lot of heat from Rangers fans because I was frankly a quite low on him after his excellent rookie season in the KHL. And everybody kind of expected him to be a top 10 prospect in the NHL that year when I did my prospects ranking. If I recall correctly, I think I had him in the 30s or in the 40s, which still says that I thought he was an excellent prospect, but maybe that I didn't think he was going to be a true star in the NHL. And I think him sort of playing these last 2 years since that year and having some ups and downs has been able to recenter expectations and put him and Rangers fans and the Rangers in a better spot, because now everybody kind of knows what the realistic projection is. And I think the realistic projection is kind of that 50 to 60 point player who can play inside your top nine and play with good players inside your top six if you need him to, help out on the power play, all of those things, but probably isn't going to be the driver in the NHL that he has proven to be both in his rookie season and then this year, less so last season. And then this year, he's been a driver at a very young age in the second best pro league in the world. Like, he is the best player on his line. And I think people kind of hope that he might be able to be that kind of player in the NHL. And I think the more realistic expectation is for him to be the second or third best player on a top line rather than the best player on a top line, and kind of fit in with others and flash his skill and his length and his puck protection and all of that in maybe different ways than his line mates. I think he gives a line a little bit of a different look, but I don't think he's going to be a true star in the league. He's not going to be a dominant night to night player. I think he's just a good piece of the puzzle. And I think this year he's looked like that. He's looked like the kind of player who could potentially come over in the next year or so and make an impact and step into a lineup and be a legitimate option. I just don't think that he's going to be a sort of lock to be a first line player or that sort of transformative prospect that really takes a good team and makes them a better team. He's just going to be a good, useful, talented, he's certainly talented for his size, player that can kind of play up and down your lineup.
Yeah, and with a team like the Rangers, with the wingers they have, it's hard to see him in a top-line role. I would think yeah. He'll probably be starting off more in a third-line role and try to bring some of that skill and that sort of thing to that, you know, top nine for the Rangers. All right, so after the top four, you've got a handful of defensemen, and it looks like the one you're highest on, we touched on Schneider, who you have at number six, but at number five, you have Zach Jones. So of that next group and of those defensemen prospect, of which the Rangers have many, Jones is your favorite behind the Lundqvist and Miller grouping.
Yeah, I think he is. And what I appreciate about Zach is that I think he plays the game the way that it's intended to be played today. He plays a very modern puck possession, calm sort of cerebral style where when players are coming at him, they can be right in his nose and it's like he sees right through them. So there's just this sort of effortlessness to his game where he never looks panicked. He never makes sort of rush decisions and he just plays within himself and recognizes when pressure comes, how to navigate either through it with a pass or a shot or around it with a sort of quick fake, he'll look left and then go right, that kind of a thing. So he's just a very subtle, confident, comfortable player when he's on the ice. And he's exactly the kind of player that excels playing alongside those sort of bigger 6'2", 6'3" types that are often common in an NHL lineup. I think you probably need two or three players like a Keandre Miller in your lineup. And then you probably need two or three players like a Zach Jones. And he's the kind of perfect complement to that type. So we'll see how he fits into that mold, because obviously certainly Nils Lundqvist and Adam Fox also kind of play that similar kind of style. So is there going to be room for him in the way that he probably warrants? We'll see. But I think once he graduates, you give him some time, even if he spends a year in the AHL, I really do think he'll emerge from college or emerge from a short time in the AHL as a really valuable piece and the kind of player who can make a third pairing excellent or just be a good piece inside the top four. So that's the kind of upside that I kind of see in Zach at this point.
It will be very interesting to see how the Rangers juggle all of these young defensemen in the next few years. Even right now, it sort of looks like they have their top four established and then they have all these other guys coming. So that we'll see if maybe, you know, who ends up getting traded or what the Rangers end up deciding to do to kind of deal with that depth. But it's a good problem to have. But as I look further down your rankings now, one of the things that was sort of interesting to me, and we last time we had you on, I know you told me that you liked these two value picks for the Rangers in this year's draft, with Evan Vierling and Brett Berard. And obviously Berard got a lot of attention for what he did at the World Juniors, but you have those guys ahead of Will Cooley, who was drafted in the second round versus those two guys who were fifth rounders, and ahead of a guy like Carl Henriksen, who the Rangers took in the second round a year before. So is that you or just think that the Rangers got such good value with Vierling and Berard that they cracked your top 10?
Yeah, I think ultimately it comes down to potential and runway and the time that these kids have to meet their ceilings. With Carl, he's a little bit further along the process. We're getting a better sense at this point of what he's going to look like at the NHL/AHL level when he eventually sort of gives it a run. And with Berard and Vierling, I still think there's more room to grow. There's room for growth in the next couple of years for them where if you're trying to project what Evan Veerling and Brett Berard look like at 20, which is Carl Henriksen's age, I'm willing to bet they're better players 2 years from now than Carl Henriksen is, say, right now. So those two kids, I just think there's something about them that gives them slightly more. I mean, all of those prospects from nine, beginning with Veerling on my list down, are kind of fringe prospects. I think you'll be happy if two, three, four of those prospects make it. That's a win for you out of those 12 or 13 names or whatever it is. So they're all long shots in their own way, but Veerling is a kid who I was very high on in his draft year. I recall telling you guys sort of telling you about how there was more to the story there, if you will, in Flint than has been reported. He really struggled there personally, mentally. It was very hard on him in Flint, and he really turned things around when he went to Barry, and he began playing with Tyson Forster on that top line and centering that top line in Barry. And I was really excited to watch Evan play this year because he's one of the players who I felt was most prepared to take a huge step and to have a breakout season in the OHL this year before, obviously, the OHL hasn't even been off the ground yet. So Evan's a player who I just think has a little bit more talent than a lot of the names that sort of lower on that list. And that gives him a little bit more potential. And certainly there's no guarantee he meets that potential, but I like his skill set. He was an unbelievable player when I watched him growing up in the AAA ranks in and around Toronto, played on the same team as Quinton Byfield in his minor hockey days and was still a second overall pick into the OHL draft. And then hasn't had maybe the picture perfect OHL career since, but I still think there's more talent there than meets the eye so far. So Veerling's a kid who I love. And then Berard's just a spark plug. I mean, Rangers fans are probably more familiar with him than Veerling at this point because of the World Juniors, but you saw him at his best, which is just involved all over the ice, sort of dirty areas, quote unquote player, but he's also got some decent skills. So I just think both those two players, if they make it, they might be able to be decent pieces. And then Will, I mean, you kind of touched on Will there. Cooley's he's a tough one for me because he had such a good rookie season in the OHL that it just did not click for him last year. They moved him around that lineup a lot to try and get him going and just couldn't get him going no matter sort of which lineup they ran, which roster they ran, different line mates, different centers, different wingers. It just never really worked for him. And he's a menacing player. Like he hits as hard as anyone. He absolutely crushes kids like two or three times a night will just run someone over. And then he's got an NHL shot. I mean, the puck rips off of his stick. So those two things are clearly what drew the Rangers to him. And I understand why they were drawn to him, but I just question his skating. He looks like he can snowshoe a little bit too much out there at times. And just the pace of play, I think, has proven to be a bit of a problem for him. I don't think he's a great playmaker beyond his shot. So there are just questions about Will that I think could limit him as kind of just a fourth line guy at his ceiling if he is to make it. And that's not the kind of player that I would typically target in the second round. So I'm just a little bit lower on Will than players like Evan and Brett, who I think offer a little bit more inside the offensive zone and a little more pace to their game as well.
All right, Scott, last guy I want to ask you about before I get you out of here, and I appreciate the time as always. And that is a guy that I think is becoming more of an intriguing prospect for Rangers fans is, I hope I'm pronouncing his last name right. I think I am. Chris Drury tried to help me with this before, but it's Lauri Paniemi, the forward from Liga, who has been highly, highly productive for TPS, which is the same team we know Kaapo Kakko played for. He, I think, scored another goal today, I believe, his 12th of the season, I think it was. I'm talking Tuesday, the day we're recording this. So do you see him as a guy with NHL upside? I think there's some questions. He was a late-round pick. But he has been highly productive in Liga. And I think that, you know, an entry level contract could be coming for him maybe in the next year or so. So do you see him as a guy who this production that he's had has raised his value? Or do you still think it will be hard for him to find himself a spot in the NHL?
Well, I still think he's probably going to be one of those players who becomes a bit of a tweener. I could imagine him coming over here, playing exceedingly well in the AHL, being a top six winger in the AHL, producing, playing on the power play, flashing his shot there. There's a lot to like about Lauri's game and his ability to impact play inside the offensive zone and his ability to finish plays in the offensive zone with a variety of shots. So that is kind of his bread and butter. I think the question with Laurie has always been, okay, is he going to be more than a roster filler? Like, is he going to be talented enough to become a clear-cut option inside the top nine? And if not, can he play on the fourth line? Is he the type of player NHL coaches, rightly or wrongly, want on the fourth line? Or does he just become a guy who comes over, fits into the sort of AHL scheme, and he's an injury call-up who you can kind of plug and play in a variety of ways, and it has some offense to his game and some flair to his game that occasionally pops and that kind of a thing. So I think that's ultimately the conversation, and I don't have a firm answer one way or the other, or a firm belief one way or the other. I would just like to see him come over here and play and give the AHL a run and then sort of fight for a roster spot and go from there. But I think that's ultimately the kind of player and the kind of prospect you have to expect. I don't think you can expect him to come over after his success in Liga and immediately take someone's job and that kind of a thing. He's going to have to earn it, and then he's going to have to show that his skill set can translate on the smaller ice surface, which with his ability to score and that kind of a thing, I think will. But it's not as simple as sort of copy and pasting him into the lineup.
Yeah, he's just, it's, you know, when you see a guy who's putting up points like that, it catches your attention. And I've been getting a lot of questions about him lately, so I want to finish with that one. All right, Scott, well, thank you so much. Definitely everybody go check out those prospect rankings at The Athletic. You can find Scott on Twitter. I will definitely share his handle and all that if you don't follow him already, which I'm assuming most of you probably do. But thank you very much, Scott. I will probably have you on again next time you do something like this. And we appreciate the time as always.
Cool. Thanks, Vince.
Okay, and we're back. Big thanks to Scott once again for coming on the show. I hope you guys enjoyed that. I know a lot of you love to hear about the prospects, and Scott knows them just about as well as anyone. I think that his top four, you know, if we're excluding Igor Shesterkin, who we know still has his rookie status, but obviously has been in the league for quite a while now, I think the top four is pretty much what you would expect with Lafreniere at number one, and then, you know, two through four, you can argue between Lundqvist, Miller, and Kratsov, but it's definitely those three in whatever combination or order you want to put them in. I did find it interesting, which I mentioned to Scott, that he had guys like Berard and Vierling ahead of guys, you know, those guys are fifth round draft picks, and he had them ahead of guys who were drafted in the second round, like Henriksen and Cooley, but his opinion is that he is high on those guys. He's been saying that from the beginning. And we do know that Berard in particular looked like a pretty good value pick for the Rangers based on what we saw at the World Juniors. So we'll get into all that stuff more in the future. But now we're going to get into your Twitter questions. And we will start with one from Brandon Faust, who wrote, "Despite the lack of center depth, is it time to bench Zibanejad for his play?" Bench? No. That's a strong, that's kind of a strong term. And, you know, the more I thought about it, I did ask David Quinn after Wednesday's practice if he had considered moving Zibanejad or Kreider down in the lineup. It looks like those guys will remain on the top line for Thursday night in Philly. Pavel Buchnevich is back up there with them. And, you know, we saw Quinn move Buch down to the third line to begin Tuesday's game because he felt like there had been a little bit of a dip in his play. But the fact is that Buch has definitely been better than Kreider and Mika. And Mika has been on the top line the whole season. Kreider had a brief demotion to the third line, but he moved back up very quickly as well. So I asked Quinn, listen, you move Buch down. Is this something that you would consider with Kreider or Zibanejad? Or are those guys, you know, too much kind of established veterans for you to do something like that with? He said it's not about them being veterans. I think he said their veteran status has run out, but he doesn't feel like there's been a lack of effort from them. He said that he feels like those guys are almost trying too hard, caring too much, if you will, and that's why, in part, he hasn't moved them down. But I think with Zibanejad, the obvious answer is that what's the alternative? Right now, with Hedel out, you really don't have the depth at center to move Mika down. If you move him down, I mean, Strome has, I think, played better than Mika for the most part this season, but you can move him up to the first line, but then what are you going to put Mika on the second line? I mean, if he's in the top six, he's still playing heavy minutes. So that's not really much of a benching there at all. And then if you were to move him into the bottom six, are you putting Brett Howden or Kevin Rooney in the top six? That's not a realistic option right now. With Hedl out of the lineup, the Rangers need Mika to play better. And we'll get into a moment, because another one of these questions hits on this, what I think you could maybe try to do to spark him. But I don't see it as a realistic option to move Zibanejad down in the lineup. Kreider's a little bit of a different story. You have better depth on the wing than you do at center. So I do think that there's a case that Kreider deserves to move down. He does have 4 goals, but his play has been very inconsistent. I don't think he's had a goal in a handful of games now. He had an assist on the Buchnevich goal the other night, so that was a little bit of a positive sign. He did make a pretty decent cross-ice pass to set Buch up for that one. And Quinn said that he thought Kreider was a little bit more physical in that game against the Devils, but he has largely been underwhelming. That's a pretty standard thing for him early in the season. He's a notorious slow starter. So I think Quinn and the Rangers internally are, if not confident, then hopeful that you see Kreider bounce out of this. We saw last year that he got off to a slow start, and then he went on a run in the middle of the season where he was averaging like just under a goal per game. So maybe he has that kind of hot streak in him. But I do think it's a valid question to say, hey, you moved Buch down, why wouldn't you do the same thing with Kreider? I asked him today. It looks like for at least one more game, Kreider will remain on that top line. All right, our next question comes from Jimmy Penninen. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Jimmy. Jimmy asks, what are your thoughts on Kapo? What exactly happened to him these last weeks? He started the season good, but the last couple of games has been something else. Yesterday, meaning Tuesday against the Devils, was his best performance as a Ranger. Is it just a matter of confidence? Could this have happened earlier? Well, Jimmy, I do think that confidence is a really, really big part of it. Confidence was definitely an issue with Kapo last season. I wrote about this several times. We've talked about this before, but he was a guy who, when he wasn't putting up points, felt like he wasn't contributing, and he had a tendency to beat himself up about that. With the chance to be around the team before the pandemic, I definitely saw that a lot first person, that he kind of had his head down when things weren't going his way and that he felt like he wasn't living up to his draft status. And he clearly put a lot of pressure on himself. I think this season, from a mental standpoint, he's definitely gotten better at managing expectations. But then the real difference in his game, with confidence being a big part of it, is also just his all-around assertiveness on the ice. I wrote about this over the weekend when he turned 20 on Saturday. And if you watch him play, not only does he definitely look like he added some strength, and although he's never going to be a high-end skater, I think he looks a little quicker. I think he definitely worked on that in the offseason. He told us that he did. But I just see him in the defensive zone, in the neutral zone, in the offensive zone. When it comes to a loose puck, or when it comes to a willingness to kind of throw himself into the fray, he's doing that with a lot more aggression than we saw at any point last season. He's creating turnovers. He's one of the leading guys on the team right now in terms of takeaways, and he's not giving the puck away very often. He's doing a really good job of managing the puck, making the right passes, and the goals aren't coming. That's obviously a source of frustration for him. But if you watch that game, for example, against the Devils on Tuesday night, he was tied for the team lead with 5 shots on goal. He had more chances, I think, than anybody else on the team in that game. He also had 2 other shots that didn't make it to the net because they were blocked by a Devils player. So the chances are there. I really, really feel strongly that of all the players on the team right now who aren't scoring, he is the one who looks like he's the closest to getting over that hump, more so than Mika and a lot of the other guys that we've talked about. And just that decisiveness, that feeling that like he's playing with a purpose. He knows what he's doing as he's going from one zone into the other, and that he's not afraid about getting his stick in there or even sticking his body in there when he has to play some defense or when he's fighting for a loose puck. Even when he has the puck on his stick, his ability to protect it and maneuver through traffic, I feel like that's something that he looks more comfortable with. Just every aspect of his game right now looks better than it did last season. The final piece is getting some goals to go in, which we know the Rangers desperately need, but he's playing
really well right now. He's definitely earning his ice time. He got a lot of ice time in that game against the Devils. And as we saw at Wednesday's practice, even with Panarin coming back into the lineup, which meant that a forward was going to have to move down to the third line, that was Lafreniere. Kako's spot in the top six right now looks really solidified. And we've seen his leash get longer. We've seen him get more responsibility. I would like to see him on that top power play unit. I will say that. And that is not what we saw during Wednesday's practice. It looks like Ryan Strome will be back up there for the time being. That's not necessarily a decision I agree with, especially considering how well Kako is playing. But a lot of positives. If you're only looking at the score sheet and saying, oh, he's not scoring points, you know, he's not getting it done, he's a bust, that's just silly right now. If you're watching the game, you know, not only watching the game, if you're watching the game, you can clearly see that he is much, much better, much improved, much more confident. But even if you look at the advanced analytics, his possession rates, his shot rates are all way up from last year. So this is clearly a much improved player. And the Rangers, with all the bad things going on right now, that's one thing that they have to feel really good about. All right, our final question comes from Alexi Kotaranta. I hope I'm saying that right. There's probably two last names I butchered. I'm sorry, guys. It happens to me all the time if it makes you feel any better. But Alexi wrote, everyone knows the offensive struggles. How would you construct the lines, or would you just roll with the current ones? Well, Alexi, as I pointed out in several stories and on several podcasts, I am no coach, so I am certainly no expert when it comes to constructing lines. But I did write this over the weekend. While I was watching Saturday's practice, I get these line questions all the time. I feel like every week when we do a podcast, people want to know what I think the line should be. For a while, I've had a tough time answering that because it doesn't really feel like anything has clicked that well for the Rangers. We know they've tried a variety of different combinations. I don't think, in my eyes, I've seen anything that clearly looks like the right answer. But when I was watching on Saturday and they had Panarin out, so they moved Lafreniere up to that line with Strome and Kako, that line to me looked pretty darn good in the last two games. I think it was the Rangers' best line in their last two games. They lost both those games. That line didn't produce a point in either one of them, so you can't say that they were lighting it up or anything like that. But just in terms of puck possession, in terms of the way they moved the puck, in terms of even the way they played without the puck, I thought that line looked pretty good. And Kako seemed to be playing with, as we were just touched on, a lot of confidence in that situation. And I kind of liked the idea of Strome in that role, because if you're going to have two inexperienced young guys like Lafreniere and Kako, I think it makes a lot of sense to have a veteran presence in the middle. And Strome, I think, played decently well in those games. And Quinn talked about those guys being able to rely on Strome. We talked to Strome about it, and he said that he kind of embraced that role of being a leader, mentor, whatever you want to call it. So if you keep that line intact, What kind of popped into my head is the balance that you could achieve throughout the rest of the top nine. On the top line, what I've been saying for a while that I would like to see, I know a lot of you would like to see it as well, is with Zibanejad struggling, if there's any player who I think is going to help open things up for him, it's Panarin. So if it were up to me, I would give that line a chance. Let them get a couple games together. We've seen them for shifts here and there, but we have not seen Artemi Panarin and Mika Zibanejad, who, as bad as Mika has been, those are their two best players. We have not seen them together for a full game yet this season, and I personally would like to see it. And then I think if you have those two guys, as dynamic as they can be, as productive as they can be when they're both on their games, then I don't think you need to have a highly skilled right winger on that line. I think it almost makes more sense for you to fill out that line with a guy like Colin Blackwell or a guy like Phil DiGiuseppe. Guys that skate well, guys that play solid defense, and guys that hustle. Guys that aren't afraid to stick their nose into some physical situations. Guys that aren't afraid to get to the net front. Guys that aren't afraid to dig pucks out of corners. I think having a hardworking guy like that, which Panarin had a lot of success last year with when he had Jesper Fast. I think a line with Panarin, Mika, and then, you know, you pick whether you want Blackwell or DiGiuseppe. I think those are probably the most likely candidates there. One of those guys on that line. And then what that leaves you for a third line or whatever you want to call it, you would have Kreider and Buchnevich, who we just talked about Kreider's struggles, but those guys have played a lot of minutes together. We know they have some chemistry together, and we know Buch has largely been one of the Rangers' best forwards this year. And in the middle, right now it would have to be Brett Howden or Kevin Rooney, but once Philip Hedel comes back, then that has the potential to be a really good line. If you look at the numbers from last year, when Kreider and Buch played with Hedel while Mika was hurt, that was the Rangers' best line statistically for the whole season, if you look at a lot of advanced analytics, but even just eye test. Those guys played really well together. They really helped hold down the fort while Mika was out, and I'd be curious to see if they could renew some of that chemistry. So for me, that top nine feels the most well-balanced of anything we've seen so far. Panarin and Zibanejad on one line gives you the potential for a real high-powered top line. Then Lafreniere, Strome, and Kako gives you a really interesting second, third line, whatever you want to call it, but you know, those guys seem to be playing pretty well together. And then on the third line, I really like the idea of once Hedel comes back, being able to give him a chance with Kreider and Buch and see if they could pick up where they left off last season. And to me, that would by far be the most balanced top nine that we've seen so far. Now, that's not what they're going to do. Hedel still isn't coming back for at least another week or so. He's on the COVID list right now, by the way, but he also is not healed from that upper body injury yet. Quinn said it's going to be at least another week before we have a chance of seeing him at practice. So for now, what Quinn is going to do is stick with Kreider, Mika, Buch on the top line. The second line is going to be Panarin, Strome, Kako, which, you know, to be fair, that has been a pretty good line for the Rangers. And then the third line looks like it's going to be Lafreniere with Rooney, who is now moving up ahead of Howden. Howden dropped down to the fourth line for Wednesday's practice. And then on the right wing of that line is going to be Colin Blackwell. So that's the direction they're going in now. But if you want my take on what I'd like to see, I think that with those three lines that I laid out, you would have a chance of rolling them, maybe not the same exact minutes for each line, but pretty close, and kind of spreading the wealth a little bit there. And I'd be interested to see it. We'll see if we get to see it at any point. I don't know. You know, I don't think David Quinn takes my advice in these situations. So it is what it is. But with that, we will move on and say goodbye. Thank you to everybody for listening. I hope you guys enjoyed this show. We'll see what happens in the next few games. It's going to be interesting. I think it's really important for the Rangers to have a bounce back performance and at least have the effort level that you can feel good about. Even if they don't beat a quality team like the Flyers, at least be in it, at least feel like you're competitive. So we'll see what happens there. But in the meantime, I hope you all enjoy the rest of your week, and I will talk to you next week.